broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, and welcome here to the El Pacifico, those of you who are watching on Phil TV in HD at philhendryshow.com. And welcome here to the El Pacifico, those of you who are listening across our radio network here on this beautiful summer evening, no matter where you are in the world. We thank you for joining us here on a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On this show, truth is our bitch. Oh, yeah. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. In a moment, we're going to bring on the line Doug Danger from the Orange County Register. And we're going to talk about Norway, and we're going to talk about the social fabric, whether it is the United States, whether it is Norway, the social fabric of the world, the Western world, if you'd like to be, if you'd like it to be a little more manageable, and just exactly what does that mean to us in protecting ourselves against crime. You know, there are heavy things that are afoot, but they're no crazier than any other thing that the human race has faced in the past. And I think because of the informational, the speed by which information reaches us these days, we tend to get a little more freaked out about things than we should. So we'll talk with Doug about that and all the other, you know, psychological niceties associated with that. So Doug Danger is up, concerned with that uptick in global violence. He's got a plan to stay safe. Vernon Dozier is going to be discussing an incident that occurred at summer school. And again, this sexualizing of our young people, what is that about? How can we stop it? Our number 877-876-PHIL. And our affiliate spotlight tonight, WXNT Indianapolis, Indiana, and WYDE in Birmingham, Alabama, and philhendryshow.com. And on August the 7th at 3 p.m., we'll be on Kevin Pollak's chat show at kevinpollakschatshow.com. Also tomorrow, I'm going to shoot the day shoot that I've got with the... Well, I better not say. Should I say?
Not just yet.
All right. Well, I'll let you know. Okay. So that was exciting, huh? Well, we're keeping a couple of things under the vest, although I did tell you, I did tell the viewers of our pre-show on our video cast. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. With us in Santa Ana, California this evening is Doug Danger with the Orange County Courier. And the uptick in global violence, Doug, we're not talking about wars, you know. We're not talking about the sort of standard terrorism. Would you call what happened in Norway a standard bit of global terrorism?
No, I think that's a very good question, Phil. I think that it is the correct assumption on your part. I think it's a little different. And here's why I think it's different. Do I think that fundamentalist Christian violence is any less reprehensible or any less dangerous? No, I do not. Do I think that a Christian terrorist... By the way, I want to tell you something. I've got the same cold that you had, okay?
I can hear it.
I got the same cold you had. And I was going to leave this for later on in the hour, but I've got to say something about it because I think it bespeaks... so much prejudice that still exists in our society, Phil. I was at Starbucks about 2 hours ago. I was picking up a coffee. I walk up to the young lady who knows me in there. Her name's Deandra. And I said I'll have my usual cafe latte, Deandra. And she knows me. She also knows that I'm gay. And she's heard me on the radio. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I don't make... I'm on the radio.
Yeah, on my show, you're always... I mean, you're not afraid to admit that.
Right. So... you know, I'm not always on your show, is what I'm saying, you know.
Right, but you're not private about it.
I'm not private about it. So I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, but I go into the Starbucks, and I say, Deandra, I'll have a coffee, and I'm coughing, and I've got this hoarse throat because of the cold, and she took a step back as soon as I said, hi, Deandra, I'd like my usual coffee. I got a little bit, you know, of a chest cold. And I saw the smile on her face. I saw her body language. I saw everything about this young lady who used to deal with me. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist in a very egalitarian and friendly way. And suddenly, guess what? The queer soaked in AIDS has come to...
Oh, come on, Doug.
No. I know the look. the queer soaked in AIDS has come to town.
And no, come on, wait a minute. What, you know, before on my show, you've often talked about people such as that kid at the 7-Eleven.
The kid at the 7-Eleven, Phil, you and I have talked about that, and we settled that argument a long time ago. That kid at the 7-Eleven, as soon as I said I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I want a pack of Marlboro, he gave me that look like the eyeball roll. I call it the eyeball roll.
You went behind the counter, though, and grabbed that kid by the shirt and pushed him up against the register. And when you and I talked about that, you said maybe you had been hasty. Now, what I'm saying is, if you just listen to me, isn't it possible that the look that the girl had on her face had nothing whatsoever to do with you? It might have had to do with a thought that passed through her mind.
Let me ask you something. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. How do you go from smiling and saying, "How are you today, Mr. Danger?" "I'm fine, Deandra. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And can I have a coffee?" And
Wait. Did you say I'm a gay man and a gay journalist?
Yes, I did.
Do you say that every time you're in there?
Phil, I went into the... I'm not going to answer these questions. I said to her, "I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I've got a cold. Can I have a coffee?" And that's when her face went a little blank. See, I don't want to answer your questions about it. Did you... You know, Phil, I love you, Phil, but sometimes you're like Columbo, you know.
What do you mean, Columbo?
Well, you think there's a murder mystery to solve. I'm just telling you, the girl took a step back, and that's when I reached across the counter and I grabbed one of her collars on her jacket. And
you don't think you scared that kid by doing that, do you?
I didn't scare her, Phil. Let me tell you something. I've come a long way since I came out of the closet 3 weeks ago, and I have had a lot of practice in dealing with prejudice, and I'm not going to let people get away with it. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I said to her, "Hi, Deandra, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist." And
she knows you, and she knows you very, very well. Why do you have to keep saying that every time you meet her?
I don't keep saying anything. It's a fact of my life. What do you mean I keep saying?
Every time you go in to get a coffee in there, do you say, "Hi, Deandra, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist"?
I say I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That's the fact of my life. I don't understand your question.
Are you saying it too much?
Here we go with this homophobe. I know you don't think you're a homophobe, Phil. You are what I call a closeted homophobe. You know?
I'm a homophobe because I question the number of times that you say you're a gay man and a gay journalist, especially to a girl that's serving you coffee who knows you. All right?
Yes, she knows me. Yes. Let me ask you something. Do people know your name?
Yeah.
Are they friends of yours?
Yes.
Do they use your name?
Of course they do.
All right. Do they use it a lot?
Well, I mean, every time they see me, you know.
Yeah. And every time I see Deandra, I say, "Hi, Deandra. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I want a coffee." I do it because I want to make sure she is my friend. If she's truly my friend, then I'm going to remind her, "You think you're my friend, huh? Guess what? I'm gay." Oh, yeah? Still my friend? Still want to make me coffee? Huh? Still want to breathe the same air that I breathe? So I walk in there and go, "Hi, Deandra, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist." And
so don't you think she thinks you're a little strange for doing that?
I don't care what she thinks. I want her for one reason and one reason only. Get me a coffee. I don't care whether she does it standing on her head. I don't care if she strips. I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. You know?
So you test her friendship and her loyalty to you. And by saying I'm a gay man and a gay journalist and looking at the way she reacts to that, but you don't owe her anything.
What are you, man, I tell you, you are. Phil, sometimes you just talk and talk and talk and nobody, and I mean nobody, not even the good Lord himself who put you together for whatever reasons he had, not even he understands what you're talking about. What I'm saying, if you don't mind me saying, I'm saying I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I said to her, "I'm gay." And
every time you go in there, you say to her, "You're gay."
Yes. Now, can we get on with the reason why I come on your show, or is that too much trouble?
I wanted to find out.
Because if it's too much trouble, man, I'll go on another show. I'll go on one of these other ones, a Rusty Humphrey show, or I'll go on that one guy, that Japanese guy.
What? The Japanese guy?
Yeah.
Look at man. My question had to do more with the social manner of you going around and saying you're a gay man and a gay. And I know you think I'm a homophobe.
I don't do it that much. I don't do it that much at all. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. All right? Now, if you got a problem with that, step right up to the plate and let me know. If not, then F it.
All right, well, I didn't want to get on your bad side, but I guess I did. Yeah.
I guess you did.
All right, well, we'll take a break, and we'll come back here with Doug Danger, and we'll get a nice, clean start here. Sorry, Doug. Doug's going to take your calls, and we come back. Is he being too sensitive with that barista? Well, that's an interesting question, but more to the point, we're going to get back to him talking about staying safe in a world that's growing more violent. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with me is Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier, and we are here to talk about the spiraling violence worldwide. And I don't know whether that's a very responsible thing to say, but nonetheless, that's what it seems like sometimes. And, Doug... I want you to know, as your friend, all right, forgive me if I offended you when you said to the girl, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I understand you say that because you're testing your friends. I'm a hurt that you still think of me as a homophobe.
I don't think of you as a homophobe, Phil, unless you step over the homo line. You know, we've often joked about the homo line. It's something we talk about in the gay community. Our straight friends love to tell us how much they love us and how much they support us. But then they step right over that homo line, and they're all about, hey, how come you keep talking about being a homo? So what do I answer? Is it bugging you? Because if it's bugging you, step right up to the plate. Step right up to the plate, man, and I'll bring it high and I'll bring it hot.
See how that sounds threatening? Do you see how that comes across sounding threatening?
It's not sounding threatening. But if one of my friends is embarrassed by the fact, what I said to Deandra, a young lady who has made me coffee for a year. Now, I think she's a great kid. I could care less whether she lives or dies. But as long as she is making...
Oh, that's a nice thing to say.
What's that?
I don't care whether she lives or dies.
I don't. But as long as she's making me coffee, and she and I are conversing, and we're friends, and she says to me that she's got a gay cousin, you know, all straight people say that. And I said, that's great. But just remember one thing. I'm gay. And boy, as soon as I say that, you see all the straights just kind of step back. It's almost like they do a quick step back. They kind of count their toes and fingers. You know, they check themselves for a rash. They check themselves for an open running sore.
Oh, come on, man. You can't be on it. You can't be serious. That people are that paranoid.
I'm telling you, I've seen it. And when I said to that girl, I'm a gay... Hi, Dan, I'll take my coffee. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I got a cold. Man,
did you say that on purpose?
You mean, did I say it on purpose? Yes, I said I wanted her to know. I want all my friends. I got a cold, you know. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Oh, here comes AIDS, man. Here comes AIDS. She's looking. I swear to God, I saw her look up and down the inside of her arm, and I asked her, what do you do? And I said, never mind, don't tell me. You're looking for an open, running, weeping sore. And with that, I poured the coffee out on the counter and I walked out.
Very, very adult.
Well, you know something, Phil? I came on your program here tonight to talk about something else.
Very adult. Very adult. A young lady who befriended you and...
I think she's a fine young lady.
You just couldn't care less whether she lives or dies. And you poured the coffee out on the counter.
No one says... No. I said I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. She looks at her arm, checks for a rash, open running sores, and weight loss. And
you got to be kidding me, man. She, just 5 seconds earlier, you said something about being gay, and you got her checking for weight loss. I think you're paranoid. 877-876-7445. We'll take a call on this. We also want to get into, if we can, the spiraling violence and the issue in Norway.
Well, I'd like to. That's why I came on your program. I didn't come on your program here, Phil, to talk about some little coffee barista who got her feelings hurt And so she decided to remind me of my mortality by looking at, you know, checking herself. She even pulled her... Oh, never mind.
What?
I mean, she pulled her shirt out, and she was checking like the... It looked to me like she was looking down her pants. I'm telling you, to see if any rashes were there.
And that's just as the result of you saying that you had a cold. Our number is 877-876-7445. Here's Daniel in Greensboro, North Carolina. Daniel, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
All right. I was just wondering why he was being so hateful about something that's really not that big of a deal to people. I mean, why would you have to say something like that over and over again? And, I mean, why would they even care?
Well, here's the thing, because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and DeAndre had been making me coffee for a year. Now, she's straight, and that's fine. I got nothing against straight people. But when I come in and I ask for coffee, I'm going to remind her that I'm gay. Because when you remind your straight friends that you're gay, just to see whether they still want to be friends with you or not, you know?
If they were your friends before, if they're your true friends, then they'll stay your friends. If they're not, they'll stay your friends because of your sexuality preference. Then they're not true friends, and you just need to move on and let them go.
It depends on what's in the newspaper that day. If something comes out, gays, they're going to give a tax break to gays or something. Suddenly, I don't want to be friends with a gay no more. So I go in and say, hey, DeAndre, I'll take my coffee. By the way, I'm gay. How do you feel about that? You okay with that? Okay, good.
Boy, what a thing being a friend with you, man. It's like a test.
What is?
You saying, by the way, I'm gay.
I was friends with Daniel here.
I've got a couple of friends who have been gay since high school, and they don't ever just announce it all the time. Just people, they don't care about it. It's their
life. I'm a gay man.
Their life.
I'm a gay man and a gay jerk, but I'm gay. All right?
Okay. I mean, why do you have to keep saying it? Why can't you just live it and stop having to pronounce it?
Because of the fact that if you and I were friends, Daniel, and I'm assuming you're straight, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, if you and I were friends,
right?
And okay, good, we're friends, all right. But every day is a new day, and you may suddenly think, man, I don't want to hang out with no gay. So I gotta, I gotta double check that, man.
Well,
so
well,
I'll say, hey, Daniel, what's up?
If we were true friends,
right. But what if we're not?
You honestly wouldn't have to worry about that unless you had some kind of severe subconscious problem to where you don't trust your friends. If you don't trust them, then how are they your real friends?
Yeah. I mean, do you trust straight people?
Do I trust straight people? Should I?
If they're your friends.
Now, come on. I trust a straight man. You trust a straight, and you turn around, and there's a spear in your back.
Oh, that's really nice.
To me, like somebody has actually hurt your feelings to the point to where you put up a big wall, and nobody will ever be able to get past that wall.
Hurt my feelings? Are you kidding me? I mean, all the gay bashing, every time they just beat up gays.
Well, it's gotten better.
Gotten better?
It has. I mean,
it may have gotten better.
People used to get killed almost every week if they went in the wrong side of town because of their sexual preference.
Now, and I'm still pissed off about that.
Now, if you think nowadays, they're being allowed, y'all are being allowed to get married, you're having more rights. I mean, everything's
good enough. Not good enough.
Everything
too little, too late.
And it's not regressing. You know what I mean? It's not. It's
too
not
little, too late,
better.
Man. It's too little, too
late.
They got to do more.
What do you mean?
You said you came out 3 weeks ago or something?
Yeah, 3.5 weeks ago. I've seen a lot.
If you have to have 3.5 weeks of being out in the open with it, and sounds like to me, since you came out and started being honest with yourself and everybody else, you've done nothing but have a negative attitude about it.
No, I don't have a negative attitude about it.
How's that making your life and yourself, how's that going to make you feel better by having a negative attitude about what you are?
I'm just trying to say, all this stuff they're giving gay people now, marriage, gay marriage, all that, it ain't good enough. It might maybe 2 years ago, but now it's too late. So now, even though we are getting married, that's fine, but I still have to remind people I'm gay. You know that, right, Phil?
Yes, I know you're gay.
See how homophobic he is? Yes, I know you're gay.
No, he's not homophobic. I've listened to the radio for about 20 minutes, and I swear you have said it at least 30 times in 20 minutes.
I'm a gay man and a gay, because I'm gay.
I'm asking you,
do you know I'm gay? Do you know I'm gay?
How could he not know?
What?
How could I not know? I mean, you've been telling everybody the whole time you've been on the radio.
Then tomorrow, if you and I were to run across each other and say, "Hey, how you doing, Daniel? I'm gay. How about that?" You may have a different idea. You might have a different. What if you woke up with AIDS? I don't think you'd be feeling the same way about me. Well, never mind. You know.
Boy, that's a nice thought, Daniel. Thank you very much. We'll be back here with more from Doug Danger. We are going to talk about the violence in Norway and other things with Doug Danger, the Orange County Courier, on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Yeah, but why argue about it? Understand that I'm the host of the show, okay? And welcome back, folks. Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL. Doug Danger on the line with us, and Doug is a gay man and a gay journalist, and I appreciate that. I don't want to get too further into this. The end of the topic, okay?
Why am I, and I think this is a fair question, Phil, and then I'll go wherever you want me to go with this topic tonight. But why am I looked at as some kind of a freak of nature? Because I want to check out how a barista at Starbucks feels about my homosexuality. What's unusual about that?
A barista at Starbucks, you want to find out how she feels about your homosexuality. What's unusual about that?
Oh, here we go. So I'm nuts. Is that it? Here we go. Every time you repeat something that I say, I know you're rolling your eyes and you're winking at the audience, and you want everybody to look at Doug Danger and say, "What a weird queer he is." You know?
Well, you know, I got to tell you something, Doug. The only person I've ever heard use that word that you just use is you. I don't. My listeners don't. None of my crew does. You do. And you do because you want to provoke something.
No, I don't want to provoke anything.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Now, we can end the interview right now, and I'll move on, or we can talk about what's going on in Norway.
I'd like to talk about what's going on in Norway. I'd like to be able, though, to feel as if I haven't been chastised like a child. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
All right, I'm not chastising you, but I would like to move on.
You know, I'm happy to move on, Phil, because as far as I'm concerned, what happened in Norway is obviously an abomination. What happened in Norway is an indication that we've got a lot more work to do, Phil. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Yes, I say that because when I say that, and I know there are police listening, or I know that there are some people in Norway maybe listening to your show on the Internet, I want the people in Norway to know I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. So that when the people in Norway listen to me and I say I'm gay, I cut right through the bullcrap right off the bat, and I've got the Norwegian ear. Now, I had a friend of mine, and you knew him, Jerry Cullen. Jerry was born in Ethiopia. He was raised in Norway. But Jerry never really wanted to become an American citizen. He wanted to maintain his Norwegian citizenship. But I told him that was problematic. And he asked me why. And I said, because you are African. If you look at the Norwegian people today, there's a lot of Norwegians. And
here we are with this Norwegian. Is this something that you really want to have appear in the lexicon?
Wow, get a load of the big word, the lexicon.
You want to get into a fight tonight, don't you?
No, I don't. I don't want to get into a fight. I said I'm gay to a barista at Starbucks, and that started off, you would have thought I said something like, "Hey, why don't I put on a pair of shorts, do some calisthenics, and see what slips out," which is what your next guest is going to do. What I'm saying...
Norwegian is a term you've used on my show before, and that supposedly means what?
Hey, Phil, get educated. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and a Norwegian is an African who has been raised in Norway or is a Norwegian of African descent.
A Norwegian.
Yeah, and you can say it and try to get it... No one's laughing, Phil. No one's laughing. You're saying it to get a laugh. No one's laughing. So Jerry was a Norwegian, and I had said to him that in Norway, because of more and more people of color, whether they be Norwegian or whether they be of some other, ethnicity, there's going to be some social strife. And that's when I said gay-only bunkers where gay people can at least, there's not a lot of us, so if there is some kind of violence and something that is going to create a lot of chaos, I feel that gay people should institute some kind of protection. Those would be gay-only bunkers. And
what about straight people?
Straight people have, I'm saying straight, there'll be bunkers, and there'll be places, there'll be bomb shelters and places where people could go. But we got to ensure, and I mean we must do it now, no later than 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, some kind of legislation that says gay-only bunkers are at least on the table. And they can cut it up any way they want. I don't give a damn whether Obama and Boehner get married. Doesn't make any difference to me. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. But by 1 o'clock tomorrow, they better broker a deal for gay bunkers, or I'll know the reason why.
And you understand that none of this is making any sense.
Yeah, sure, Phil. Yes, it is making sense.
I don't. How did we get from Norwegian to gay bunkers?
Are we talking about violence in Norway?
Yes.
Okay. I'm talking about a place to protect people. You can understand what I'm talking about.
All right. I don't.
I brought up Jerry because of the changing look and the changing face, if you will, of Norwegian society, and some of that includes people of color. Why do you think this guy did what he did? Because the guy was a racist. He was a anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, a white supremacist. You got Norwegians, and you have to find a place in society for them, as we have found a place for African-American people, and... or the Afrigans.
And what is an Afrigan?
You could call them Afrigan or Norwegian.
But Afrigan.
Yes. Are you having a hard time with that? Can someone call up and please tell Mr. Hendry that these are perfectly normal uses of the word, a word that means a Norwegian of African descent or an African of Norwegian descent?
Well, how many people are there like that?
Of what?
How many Africans of Norwegian descent are there?
I don't know. I'm saying that if there are, we can at least begin to do the social study to quantify what the African means to that part of the world as opposed to Norwegian. Now, the bunker that I want to set up, the gay-only bunker, is a bunker that is going to ensure the survival of gay people. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Now, the question that you had before we went on the air was, how does the race propagate when you only have gay men and gay blank, whatever occupation, gay men and gay plumbers, gay men and gay news anchors, gay men and gay artists, gay men and gay, gay men and gay everything, you know, gay men and gay chefs. And
yes, I know, every profession.
Right. Well, it's easy. Men are not the only homosexuals. We have homosexual women. We have lesbians. Now, lesbians are antisocial when it comes to straight people. Gay men, on the other hand, are very comfortable with straight women. But lesbians are uncomfortable with straight men. So how do we propagate the society? Very simple. Lesbians will have to have sex with gay men. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I'm mindful of the civil liberties of people. But if the gay people of this country and the world want to keep the species going, then lesbian women are going to have to get with the program and just shut up and, you know, do as they're told. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, Phil.
Well, if I hear what you're saying correctly, you're saying that in the event that society spins so far out of control that gays are all in one bunker and...
They're not all in one bunker. They would be gay-only bunkers.
Gay-only bunkers.
You know, and so don't treat me like I'm a George Norrie freak, okay? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? I've got a Norwegian friend. I have three or four friends that are African. I'm a man who understands that society is spinning out of control in some areas of the world, and a gay-only bunker where lesbians would be forced to do their duty, I think, is the only way to go.
And forced to do their duty. So what you have essentially here is a bunker full of gay men who, when the time comes to make sure that the race propagates, as you put it, to make sure that we have human beings being born, because I guess we don't know that straight people are having sex. Is that it?
I have no way of knowing. if I'm in a gay bunker, I've got to assume that all the straights are dead. I must assume that the straights are gone and that only gays have survived. In which case, as a gay man and a gay journalist, I have to look to the lesbian as the mother. And we do not have sex with each other as a rule, but a gay man is far more amenable to females than lesbians are to males. So someone's got to call the shots. Someone's going to have to say, drop the handkerchief and say, go. Someone's going to have to turn on the green light. Someone's going to have to cut the ribbon.
I understand, Doug, okay? Someone's going to have to
make the decisions.
All right. And you don't think that that's, I'm going to use the word, rape?
What?
You're forcing these women.
I don't think, Phil, once we spell out to these, okay, I'll use your word. Once we spell out to these lesbians what's needed, I don't think they're going to put up a fuss. Where are they going to go? Where are they going to run to? Nowhere. The gay men and the gay blank, whatever profession, are looking out. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, the lesbian will understand. Now, that's if we even get that far. But from what I've been hearing tonight, how I can't even say I'm a gay man and a gay journalist without someone stepping back and checking themselves to make sure that they haven't turned into a human skeleton, lost all their hair. I can't say gay man and gay journalist to someone without him turning, looking in a mirror, and expecting to see Michael Stipe. I can't see.
Okay, so you're saying that all of the homophobia that's existing in the world right now is something that obviously is perhaps will render moot all of these discussions of survival. I want to ask you something before we get to the break. Are we not getting a little far ahead of ourselves here?
In what way?
But you're talking about needing bunkers and needing to go underground and needing this and needing that because we had this horrible incident in Norway. Where do you get from this Norwegian incident that society is spinning out of control?
Well, I think if you take a country that has been traditionally a country of very even-tempered people, a country not known for a high crime rate, a country that's known for its social liberalism, or that could very well be Sweden. See, that's the other thing. I've been looking in books, and I've been looking at... I think it's Sweden, Phil, that's actually the more liberal country. I think the Norwegian... Or not Norwegian, but I think the Norwegians have been...
No, the Norwegians.
The Norwegian, I don't think you're right. I think Norwegian is the term you use for an African who's from Norway. Is that right?
No, that's not right. Norwegian is the term you use for someone from Norway.
All right, would you mind very much if I not just take your word for it? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I like to check things out. Would you mind if I just said Norwegians or the Norway people? Would that be all right with you?
You can do whatever you want, Doug. I mean, the audience is going to make their decisions.
All right, I'll take my chances with the audience, okay? My point is this. If you look into the history of the Norwegians, they, guess what, Phil? Nazis. They were Nazis.
Well, no, they were not. I mean, they had a Nazi government that was, they were taken over by the Germans.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They were taken over, yeah.
Okay, but they were very brave. The Norwegian people resisted the Nazis very bravely, okay? They, in fact, and I shouldn't say this, they put up more of a fight than the French did.
Wow. Wow! Man, you talk about me. Look what you just said. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And you're knocking the French, the one country that's friendly to me and mine, the one country that would most likely set aside government funding for a gay bunker.
And I didn't mean to knock the French, but I'm telling you, I think, and this is my humble opinion, the Norwegians put up more of a fight against the Nazis than the French did. Now, what's that got to do with what we're talking about?
I'm saying it because I think the Norwegians are more right-wing than the Swedes. You hear about all the Swedes and the boob jobs, whatever it was they invented. I think the Swedes invented boob jobs, didn't they?
The Swedes have sexual reassignment surgery was something that was done in Sweden. I think that the sexual mores may be liberal. I don't know that they invented the boob job necessarily. So you're saying that it makes sense that Norway would have this kind of violence?
I think so. And that's why I said you better get a gay bunker going there before you get it going anywhere else. So that's all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to make anybody pissed. But I'm more comfortable calling the people from Norway, the Norwegians or the Norway people, until I can double-check what you call someone that comes from up there.
I can tell you it's Norwegian.
And I'm telling you that that Norwegian is the term you use for an African of Norwegian descent.
Okay, Doug, whatever you say, I have to take a break.
And I can tell. Okay, so that's a condescending tone in your voice.
You know, Doug, every time you come on this show, you're pissed off about something, and I'm just going to put you on hold right now. I don't have the time to argue with you at present. Doug Danger with us. And society. Is society reaching... I don't see it personally. I think we have violence, but I think we're dealing with it on an individual case-by-case basis. I think it's something they're dealing with in Norway right now. The democratic society that they have, coupled with a long tradition of gun ownership in Norway. They have a very long tradition of gun ownership in Norway. And many of the same kinds of extreme thinkers. And so we had this horrible event. But to say that we need bunkers, let alone gay bunkers, I think is paranoid. We'll be back, though, with Doug Danger. And I'm sure that when we do come back with Doug Danger, he will be ready to jump me and call me a homophobe or something. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I said it's a Norwegian.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with me, of course, Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. We've been talking the last few minutes about I don't like to use the term the spiraling violence. It seems to me that we have a world that has much more contact with itself, and we are in touch with each other much more readily. We know what's going on everywhere. We just know what's going on everywhere. We see it. We hear it. We feel it. And we also are facing a world that is increasingly democratic, or people want to live in a democratic society. And there are long-standing democratic societies. There are burgeoning democratic societies. There are people trying to shake off the bonds of social unrest and decay and insecurity. Norway, like many countries in Europe, has increasingly resettled, if you will, or otherwise admitted as immigrant people of color from Africa, perhaps, or the Middle East. And so you have this reaction, like you have in Germany, and like you have in France, and like you have in the Netherlands. And I really shouldn't compare them, because in the Netherlands there has been a reaction against Islamists and Islamic fundamentalists, which I think is reasonable. In Germany, there's been a lot of racism. In France, there's not only racism but continued anti-Semitism. And in Norway now, you've got this guy who is against. Look at our country. Look at how much further along we are. Look at how we have wrestled with these problems in our country. I'm not saying that we're perfect or better, and I certainly, if I were a black person, a black man or woman listening to the Phil Hendry Show tonight, and I said that, you guys might be rolling your eyes a little bit, but I think you have to agree. My God, we're not still asking the question whether we can afford a multiracial society or whether it's possible. We've lived it, and we're making it work. Doug?
Well, hold on for a minute. I got to do hey. Nice speech, Bill. Nice speech.
And why do you want to be sarcastic?
I'm not being sarcastic, but the time that you took setting up the last segment of your show with that speech just basically robbed me of my ability to come on here and give a big closer, a big finish. I mean, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I came on your program talking about the gay bunker, and you're off talking about Norwegians. Now, I think it's very plain.
Don't you think...
May I finish, please?
All right, go ahead.
God. I think it's very plain that your point of view, which is that there is a multiracial society developing in Norway that is somehow irritating the far right in that country, it may be a good point, Phil, and I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I can see more clearly than a lot of people that maybe that's a good point, and maybe you're pandering, maybe you're not. But I think my point, which is that we need more gay bunkers, and we have to make it evident to lesbians they'll be expected to carry the babies to term. I think that's far more relevant.
And did you just heard what you said, right?
Yes, I heard. What does that mean? Did I hear what I said?
You just heard what you said, and you think it's far more relevant to talk about the need for gay bunkers than it is to talk about the possible emerging multiracial society in Norway.
Yes. Yeah. Is that clear enough? Yes. Y-E-S. Yes. You know why?
Why?
Because I think at the very heart and soul of what's going to save Norway is not going to be more understanding between Norwegians, Norway people, the Norway folk, I don't know, you know, whatever you want, you know, the Norwegians. I don't know, Phil, I'm not willing to say they're called Norwegians, that's all.
Yeah, you just go ahead and keep calling them Norwegians.
Yeah, you see that? There's the music. So in other words, I wasn't allowed to make my point, now you got to rush me off the air, and I sound like the asshat that I've always sounded like. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I want people to know that. I love people, but when I gotta, shoot.
Phil Hendry.
Don't roll your eyes looking at me.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. We do it every night here until 1 o'clock, and that's 1 o'clock Pacific for Eastern. Welcome back to our program. Vernon Dozier from Belmore Academy, who is a contributor on education issues as well as issues having to do with not just the education of our kids, but the overall teacher situation. We're going to be talking to him in just a moment about summer school. Reminder that we're online at philhendryshow.com. You can look at our live streaming video of the show right now, and all you have to have is a backstage pass to check out our broadcast from El Pacifico in high definition video right now, as well as hours and hours, thousands of hours of archive material, webisodes, classic Phil podcasts, the daily podcast of the show, our news feed, and more, available at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Really, the only firewall, they call it a firewall, you know?
Yeah, but it's not a firewall.
It's what they call a firewall, a subscription site.
Yeah, but that's the firewall's New York Times.
The firewall's New York Times. All right, fine. Ours is whatever, a subscription site. The only one that's worth it is what I'm trying to say. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Excuse me for, man, I was choking there. Turn off Eyewitness News. I don't know. Have we got a TV on?
It sounded like you had a television set on there, Phil.
Hold on for a minute.
Yeah, turn it off.
All right, Vernon Dozier is joining us here from Glendale, California. Vernon, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Phil. Thank you for having me on your program.
Summer school, we had you on the program last week talking about summer school and about a summer basketball, softball campaign that you had going on, right?
That was the softball campaign, softball season that was underway that we had to suspend because of the situation regarding our equipment check, which I have to say that wasn't my prouder moment because your program effectively put an end to that.
Well, no, my program didn't put an end to it, sir. The things that you said on the show put an end to it.
The things I said on your show, Mr. Hendry, were they were things that every coach across this country understood.
Well, I don't think you heard me say anything other than the facts, and that was that you... I gave my opinion. I don't want to fight that fight all over again, okay?
No, if I were you, I wouldn't want to fight it either. That's why I've asked to come back on the program tonight to tell you some of the things that we're doing and to also tell you some of the things we're up against. I've said to you many times, Phil, that the education of our young people as well as the training of them, whether it's in the athletic field or anywhere else, is contingent upon the cooperation we get from parents and the cooperation we get from the community. We can't get anything done if we have parents or members of the media like yourself who are holding us back. And
well, I don't think I held you back the other night. You said you were doing an equipment check on young ladies that people thought was inappropriate, and I'm sorry that they suspended the season. I really am.
Well, they have suspended the season for a lot of young women that wanted to play softball, and now they can't. So if you don't feel responsible for that, but I would like to come on your program tonight and talk about some of the good things that we're doing. Because of what I did with those young women and what the other coaches, Coach Vasquez, Coach Rodriguez, Coach Hernandez, Coach Henderson, Coach Billups, all the coaches from all of the schools across the Burbank-Glendale area, if it wasn't good enough, if there's something more that we need to do, we stand ready to do it, Bill.
Well, I think that's a good attitude, and I think you're fine coaches, and I think you're good teachers. I just think that one got away from you.
Well, it didn't get away from me. Like I said, these are young women that wanted to play softball, and now they've suspended the program. And again, I don't want to rub it in, but thanks to you. And
no, I do not accept that, sir.
All right, well, it's fair enough, Phil. But the what we're doing now, okay, with the Yankee Doodle, our Yankee Doodle Summer, which is a build-up to our 2011 season, it's called the Yankee Rose. I'm sorry, Yankee Rose build-up to our 2011 season. And in football and all of the scholastic programs, we do calisthenics, doing summer school, and we've worked in physical education in summer school.
Now, what with the Yankee Rose is what?
Yankee Rose is a physical fitness campaign that we're on throughout the summer of 2011, so that by the time the kids are in school for the 2011 fall, they are in shape and they're ready to not only hit the books, but they're ready to hit the blocks, they're ready to hit the football field, they're ready to hit the pool. Our water polo season is going to kick off in September. So there's quite a bit that we're doing, the calisthenics department. But we do need the cooperation of parents. The situation with yesterday's calisthenic class, and I do appreciate you holding off until you had me on your program, okay, is an example of the hypersexualization of our young people.
All right, but that was, again, that's something we need to talk about, right?
I'm more than willing to talk about it, but I don't want it to stop the Yankee Rose physical fitness campaign.
All right, so you're doing calisthenics in front of the kids.
We were doing leg stretching.
And in your words, explain what happened.
Well, again, when you say what happened, you make it sound as if something did happen. What happened was we were alerted to a young woman who I think is living in a home where there is too much hypersexualization going on.
And well, how were you alerted to that?
We were alerted to that when I was doing a leg stretch, which is essentially just putting the ankle as far back behind the head as you can get. So you're taking that leg and you're stretching that glute muscle back there. And as I did that, as will happen, and this, again, Phil, I think is an interesting lesson. When we're talking about athletics, we're talking simply about an exercise that is non-sexual. We're talking about the use of the body. And that this young lady went running back to her parents and complained about this, I think speaks to a very serious need.
Okay, but we have to know what happened, okay?
Well, I told you what happened. She went back and talked to her parents.
All right, but what got her, I guess, to talk to her parents?
When I stretched my leg back, then my private, some of my privates came out of the side of the shorts. Now, I saw it happen. I looked up and I saw she was staring at me. And I looked over and I saw two or three of the male students staring and they looked surprised. And I wondered what had happened. Had somebody had an accident? Was there someone having a difficult time breathing? I did not know. And then I glanced down and I saw that I had sort of spilled out of the right pant leg or the right short. When you're wearing a pair of shorts, if you're wearing pants, then one of the legs is a pant. If you're wearing shorts, then one of the legs is a short. So I had spilled out of one short. And that's when I noticed, and so I simply just pulled it back in and continued with the stretching.
And now, when you noticed that you had come out of your shorts like that, and
I had come out of a short, one short, not shorts. It was one side.
All right, why is it important to?
Well, I'll tell you why it's important. It's important to know so that you don't think there was some kind of garish display going on. It was one part of the athletic shorts that I was wearing. In other words, to wit, one short. It was not shorts, it was short. So when that happened, I went back to making my stretch, doing my stretches. I got up, and I did a quick check with my left hand. My right hand I had used to readjust myself. I'm certainly not going to, put my same hand down there. And
why?
For hygiene reasons. So I used the left hand to quickly adjust and make sure it wasn't doing the same thing. And then we went about doing intramural basketball and so on. But when I got called into the board meeting this morning, and I was told that this young lady went back to her family and said that Coach Dozier's testicles had come, had flown, it's difficult for me to say. It's very embarrassing, too, Phil.
Well, I can understand why it is,
All right, you can understand why it is. I'm trying to say.
So the young lady, well, just to move it along, the young lady said to her parents that she saw this. What did the board say to you?
I explained to the board that had this girl not come from a hypersexualized home, it would not have been something that she would have gone back to her parents and made an issue out of, and the parents would not have called the board and made an issue out of it. I explained to the board, I said, this is what we are trying to fight against in our schools, that the kids see sex everywhere. And
well, what do you not believe that there is an appropriate and inappropriate amount of the human body that should be exposed or not to the opposite sex?
Let me explain something to you, Phil. In the film, what was the? I was talking to you before we went on the air about a couple of things, but I think that there was a movie that had come out called G.I. Jane. And in the film G.I. Jane, you can see she's taking a shower with her top off. Now, it's played by Demi Moore. Ms. Moore went and had breast implants before she did this film. So she is a very well-endowed young lady. And there she is taking a shower with these other Navy SEALs. No one made a big deal out of it. No one was making a show of it. And I said to my class, I said to the board, I said, that's an example of a very healthy sexualized situation. So that's what I want to train my kids to do.
So in other words, you want to see kids walking around. Are girls and boys supposed to take showers together?
Ultimately, that's going to be the goal. If we can take the sexualization out of our schools so that we can, literally, in my lifetime, but someday I hope that young men and young women can shower together and it won't be a big thing. Because imagine how much money we'll be able to save on facilities. Well, I am trying to push us toward that day, and that's what I told the board.
The day when young men and young women are showering together, and
I was at a volleyball tournament. This is what I want to tell you about. I was at a beach volleyball tournament, and the top came off one of the young ladies that was a competitor. Did anybody go, oh, my God, did any man stand up and ask her out on a date? Did a guy suddenly get so crazy that he started to you-know-what? No, none of that happened. The young lady looked down. She sort of shrugged her shoulders and put her top back on. I mean, she wasn't, it was not, I don't know how to put this. I want to be respectful of it. She didn't really have anything there, and that's probably why no one cared. But
Well, that's very, very respectful of you to say that.
No, I don't think I'm being disrespectful.
She didn't have anything, so no one cared. Maybe that's why. In other words, if she was, if she had a big pair of breasts, then it would have been a big deal?
No, it would not have been a big deal.
You would have reacted the same way?
I would have taken note at how... I think you're misunderstanding. I would have taken note at how big they were.
Okay, all right. I tell you what, let's take a break. We're talking to Vernon Dozier on the sexualization of our teenagers. He was doing calisthenics in front of a summer school class that he teaches, and his private area fell out of his shorts. And a girl complained to her parents. The parents complained to the school, and Mr. Dozier told the school board, this is an example of that girl hyper-focusing on sex. It was a simple mistake, and let's move on. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Vernon Dozier also says he foresees a time when boys and girls will be showering together in the gym because there will be a time in the future when no longer will we all be preoccupied with sex, especially our kids. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
I spilled out of a short, not shorts. You keep blowing it.
Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. With me is Vernon Dozier, talking from Belmar Academy in Glendale, California. And we're discussing with Vernon the summer school that he and the rest, obviously, of the Belmar Academy and the private schools in the area are conducting, as well as public schools, and the athletic programs, the physical education programs that they've instituted this year for the first time. Now, the calisthenics that you were doing, and you're talking about not sexualizing kids, correct?
That is correct, yes, because I had said to John Harper, who is the president of our board, is that the minute that a child goes home and says, well, this happened, that happened, you know, I saw this, I saw that, you know, they're the ones that go to their parents. Their parents are the ones that will institute these warnings that they want. Now, I was insulted because John said that someone had been videotaping for one of the local TV stations football practice. One of the schools had started early with their summer practice. You know, we're not supposed to do our two-a-days until well later in the month, but and they said that they had on tape this incident of me falling out of my shorts.
What do you mean on tape? Video?
Audio tape. And I said, if you've got it, I want to hear it, and then I can tell whether these parents are liars, and excuse me for saying this, Phil, are bald-faced liars saying that I somehow purposefully slipped it out. And
are the parents accusing you of purposefully falling out of your shorts? And I have to ask you a question.
I believe they are, yeah.
I got to ask you a question at this time. With all due respect, you and I talked about last week equipment. What about an athletic supporter? What about...
All right, well, hold on for a minute, Phil. I don't know that you know what you're talking about.
No, hold on. Yes, I do know what I'm talking about. I don't have to play professional football to know that if you're in a physical education class, you should be wearing some kind of an athletic supporter, correct?
Not if you are an instructor who is not going to be partaking of the athletic competition. I'm there as a referee. And
well, you were doing calisthenics.
Calisthenics is not a competitive sport. Calisthenics is simply calisthenics. There's no need for you to wear a protective cup, and certainly no need to put an athletic supporter on. And
well, you fell out of your shorts, you said. There you were. And
can I play the tape recording? Because I told John that I don't believe it. I told John that I think the individual at Channel 19, this guy Sugarman, who was the cameraman, I said, he's the liar. I said, these parents are liars. I said, you've got another liar, and that's Sugarman. So you've got Christy Adele's parents. They're two bald-faced liars. And I've got Sugarman, who's a liar. And
who's Sugarman?
Sugarman is the cameraman for Channel 19. Dwayne Sugarman.
All right, Dwayne Sugarman. And then the parents who?
The Adeles, Christy and Don Adele. And I said their daughter, Deandra. And I said that you've got one, two, three, four bald-faced liars telling me that this is the sound of my... Forgive me for saying it, my manhood. I don't want to over, you know.
You're claiming that your testicles fell out of your short, not your shorts.
Yes, because it was just one short.
All right, here is the recording that we got from Channel 19 of that happening while you were out doing calisthenics. God, that was loud. That was really loud.
Well, that's what they're trying to tell me, that they're so... I should be flattered. Because they said it made like the sound of just a rock hitting the cement. Because we were out on asphalt, and we were sitting on the asphalt doing these. Play it one more time. She said, 1, 2. Now, that could easily be my X, you know, X, 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 Y, Z, or my bleep, bleep, my two bleeps. But no way are you going to tell me that that's what that is, because that means that one... and then the other, and I'm sitting there like the dumbest ass that was ever let to live past a cradle doing a leg stretch after I look down and see, I don't think so.
So you're saying they made it up?
I think they made it up, yes, sir. I do.
All right, we're talking here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Now the girl goes home and tells her parents. They come back to the board, and they say what?
Well, the parents said that I was doing calisthenics. Why wasn't I wearing it? The same thing you said, Phil, which was a little disappointing, but I know you have to ask the question.
Well, I'm not trying to indict you. I think it's a fair question.
Well, they asked, they said, why wasn't I wearing an athletic supporter? And I said to them, you know, I said, with all due respect, Mr. Dell, I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, do you know anything really about physical education? She's a very mousy woman, and he's not much, you know, he's a nice man, but he's not a whole lot to, not a very formidable man. And as a coach, when you meet a guy like that, you see a little man who isn't much bigger than his wife, and he sits there, and he's, you know, very mousy and mouse-like, and he says, yeah, let me tell you something. I said, sir, I said, I've seen a lot of guys like you. I said, you really have got to stand up to her. I said, she's in here. She's got everyone believing that I've got a, you know, I got a couple of billiard balls in my short. And he said, short? And I said, yes, because your wife came in here with what she claims is a tape recording of my bleeps falling out of my short. And I swear to Almighty God, those are two paperweights. Listen to that. I said, do you believe that? He said, I don't want to believe it because I ain't got nothing like that. And I said, well, I said, you look like a little man, just a little man. I said, have you ever made any difference in your life? He said, I don't think I have. I said, what is that music?
We have to take a break.
Well, I'm not done. So, anyway, I said,
hold on for a minute and we'll let you finish. We're talking with Vernon Dozier and this incident at Belmar Academy, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
Phil Hendry.
You're just a little man.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show and Vernon Dozier in Glendale, California, as we talk about our kids in school and summer school especially. Our kids coming to school with an over-sexualized view of life. Now, Coach Dozier, you had an incident there when you were conducting calisthenics in front of the kids where your privates fell out of your pants
I got to keep correcting the short.
All right, the short. I don't know why it's important to specify a short as opposed to shorts. You were wearing athletic shorts.
Yes, sir, I was wearing athletic shorts. Yes, sir, I was wearing athletic shorts, and I'm simply saying that what I was doing was calisthenics, and the if I'm maybe allowed to use the word, the testicles slid to one side and then did a slide. They did a slid slide, or what you would call an alley ball. Okay.
And I didn't know there were words for this. I hope you're not using this in front of the kids.
No, sir, I'm not. I had a gutter ball. I adjusted it.
A gutter ball.
Yes, sir. That's what it's called.
Oh, is that what it's called? You know, you're talking to a man.
I understand I'm talking to a man, Mr. Hendry. I don't know if you've been involved in athletics as I have. I've not only been a football coach, I was also a semi-pro football player. I played minor league baseball in the Chicago Cub organization. Okay, you want me to keep going, or you want to catch up?
No, look, I'm not impressed with that. I'm saying I'm not familiar with these terms, and I don't know that they are applicable. We're talking about a class of kids, okay?
I understand it's a class of kids. I'm trying to let you, another man, I'm looking for some understanding and maybe someone who can sympathize, okay? I had a gutter ball. I tried to adjust. The kid goes home, and the next thing you know, I'm brought in on charges. I'm standing there tall before the man. Now, I didn't want it to happen. I tried the very best I could not to have it happen. But you gutter ball one day, and you're standing tall before the man, and he's going to take a giant you-know-what on you. So I'm back, so I'm improvising, okay?
And you're improvising, and so you came up with this idea that kids are hypersexualized.
I don't believe it. Why else would a kid go home and say, Mr. Dozier gutterballed in front of us?
Did she use that term?
I believe that she might have.
Did she use that term? Did this high school student of yours use that term?
Mr. Henry, I'm not being interrogated here, am I?
I'm not trying to upset you, Coach.
Okay.
I'm just asking, did this girl use the term?
I think it is reasonable to assume that she went home and said, Mom, Dad, you got her balled just like I said.
And what does that mean?
Because this girl had been giving me the evil eye since she started in my class. And every morning that we did calisthenics, I personally felt she was waiting for a gutter ball. All right, maybe she wasn't. Maybe she went home to her parents and she said, Mom, Dad, Coach Dozier gutter balled. And maybe the father said, see, I told you. Or maybe the mother said, well, congratulations. I don't know what they said, but all I do know is...
You don't even know that this kid knows that term.
If I could just say one thing, Mr. Ender, you don't sound well. You don't even know. You don't sound well at all.
Let me just concentrate on how well I sound. You don't know that that child knew that term.
No, I do not.
So you're assuming, and I think it's an assumption that doesn't speak very well of how you think of your students, that one of your female students went home and said, Coach Dozier gutterballed.
I don't believe, Mr. Henry, that I'm putting my students down.
Well, you attribute to them some pretty garbage behavior.
Because, are you serious? Because
yes, I am serious. That goes right along with you doing calisthenics in front of kids under the age of 18, not wearing any athletic supporter.
I did not wear it. I've already explained to you why. I've taken steps, the best steps that I know how, to try to amend the situation. I talked to Dr. Prokop. I talked to Drs. Wilson. I talked as well to the Dean of Discipline, who is not me. It's another teacher entirely. It's Bill Sterling. And I told them that I will do whatever I can to make it right.
I think that that's a start, but I think that when something like that happens in front of a female student and you dismiss it as she's overly sexualized and you gutterballed and you're busting down on me because I don't use the word pant instead of pants... And
I'm hoping that people can be technically correct. That's all I'm hoping for, so that when my time comes to go before the board for a second time after I make these corrections, I can at least say I tried to correct the record.
Well, I don't know how my saying that you slipped out of your pant instead of your pant, what difference does that make?
Everything right now, Mr. Henry, if my career's riding on this, I want everything to be right. That's all I'm asking for.
Now, all right, what are the steps? My understanding is you've got some warning system.
I got her ball or one of the students. And
can we not use that term, by the way?
I beg your pardon. If my testicles slip out of my shorts, we have a PA system. This is warning one. Jim, get warning one. We'll go to warning two. This is warning one. Now, hold on. I know that sounds comic, but what I'm trying to do...
It doesn't sound like you're taking it seriously.
No, sir, that is not true. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make sure that the students don't overly focus. This has been my point. Okay, when I did a deuce.
Just use some term that we can all as adults appreciate. You did a deuce.
All right. Do you want me to say the words?
Just say when your privates slipped out of your short.
When my privates, boy, does that sound gay.
Well, you know something, Coach? At this point, I don't care how you sound. I don't want a lot of juvenile behavior.
When my private slipped out of my short, the student went back to her parents, and she said that Coach Dozier, I guess she said to her parents that my private slipped out of my short. And so I went to the board, and I said, I'll put a warning system in, but one that will not drag attention, and one that will alleviate the tension that may be created by my... privates, you know, going out of my short. And that's when Dr. Prokop stood up and said, and he started yelling at me, saying, why don't you speak English? And I said, okay, I thought you wanted me to talk like a decent man. They said, yes, we do, and you sound like, and then he used the word, I did not use the word, he did. He said, you sound like a retard every time you say, I slipped out of a short. I said, okay, I'll say it. I gutterballed, and that's when he got angry again.
One would think, Coach,
what he said,
one would think, Coach, that as an educator, as a man with a college degree, and I know you've got two degrees, you have one in English and you have one in physical education, correct?
That's correct, yes.
That you would find more in your vocabulary to deal with a situation than gutter ball, slip slide, slipped out, I did a deuce, or any of these other asinine terms that you are not only addicted to, but you think your students use. If my daughter came home to me and said something like this happened, I'd be down there talking face-to-face with you.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'll tell you what it means. I'd be asking you, how did that happen? How did that happen? And you would say to me, well, I didn't wear an athletic supporter. And I would say, I find that very unusual.
And you'd report me to the board?
You better believe it. I'd probably want you fired.
How many years have you known me?
I've known you a lot of years, and that's a stupid thing you did, okay?
The warning system that we put into place, if I may continue, okay?
All right.
The warning system, when I slide, if, that's a big if I slip out or slid out again. Now that echoes across, and it's loud enough so all the students know that Mr. Dozier's, Mr. Dozier's came out, okay?
And all the students in the school know that Mr. Dozier's came out.
Of the short. Oh, my God. Are you trying to make an issue out of it?
No, let me hear the other one.
Hear the other what?
The other warning. You said you have two warnings.
Yeah. That's warning one. If for whatever reason they come out both sides. I don't know. Can I say that?
I think we understand what you mean.
In other words, out of the shorts, plural.
Uh-huh.
Then we hear, this is what we call the China Sea. And that's when the student...
The China Sea.
Yes, sir. I mean, you didn't want me to use gutter ball, so...
Go ahead.
If Mr. Dozier is a China Sea...
There's a gong.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to... Oh, my God, if I'm going to say China Sea, don't I get to put a gong there?
And this is what you've gone to the board at your school to... You've gone to them and say, this is what I will do if, for whatever reason, my testicles fall out of my shorts again. Short, excuse me.
Thank you. Yes.
And what was their response?
They were open to it. They said they wanted to take it under advisement. My whole feeling was that if we can deal with it, if I'm doing a leg stretch, and all of a sudden I look down and go, oh boy, I'm able to push a remote button, and the kids all laugh. The kids are, ha ha, Mr. Dozier did it again. But if I look down and it's gone what I call bug-eyed, or it's done a Marty Feldman, or it's a China Sea, then... And that's when the kids are supposed to turn and go back into the building and remain there until we... sound an all clear. And
until you sound an all clear?
Yes, sir. And I thought that I had discussed this with you before I came on your program.
No, you didn't discuss anything with me. You didn't discuss anything with me, and you know that you didn't discuss anything with me.
I did discuss the all clear.
In the break, in the commercial break you did. I had no idea that your way of dealing with this problem was with this warning system.
The kids go in. If it's a China Sea, they go inside. Once I get on a pair of pants, then we sign the all clear.
So let me get this straight. All of a sudden, one day you're doing calisthenics, and uh-oh. And the kids are laughing, but wait a minute, it may be a China Sea. That means all the kids have to go inside until the all clear is sounded.
Well, you go ahead and laugh, pal, but if you could come up with a better system, have at it. Have fun. Okay? Because that's the best I...
Oh, look, he's going to ball now.
Yeah.
Where'd my ball?
You're going to cry because I'm making fun of your warning system?
Yeah.
All the kids better go inside. Okay, they can come out now.
All right, Mr. Andrew, that's fine. I know you're a Catholic. That means you believe in hell. Well, guess what? There's a shuttle leaving in 3 minutes.
I knew he'd hang up on me. It's just a matter of time. But if you want to turn your school and your calisthenics class in a summer school into some kind of a comedy routine, because you're not smart enough to wear an athletic supporter, will you quit it? That's your problem. That's on you, Charlie, not me. On you. 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Ahead, we've got our news and information hour. Will you turn that stuff off? Our news and information hour here on the Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Well, famous Phil Hendry Show, and welcome back here on this Monday night. And you probably hear the hoarseness in my voice continuing, and it's just what's going to... Yeah, I mean, it's on its way out the door. And every day it gets better, but I don't think I've ever had anything quite like this. And I was wondering the other day, I wonder if this is because I quit smoking. You know, this is the first really bad cold that I've had, if you will, since I quit smoking cigarettes. And the other night I was just fooling around, looking at different videos that we'd done for Facebook, videos that we'd done for our website and so on. And I came across one, and it was of me about 2 months after I got out of the hospital. I was promoting one of the shows for that night. And my voice was worse than it was. I wouldn't say it was worse than it is right now. It was about like the way it was now. I had no idea at that time that I was still, you know, some 2 months after I got out of the hospital, still getting my lungs back and getting my speaking voice back. And that was after a bout with pneumonia. So I'm a year and a half after giving up cigarettes. This is the first cold that I've had in 5 years, and it's a bitch. I mean, it is a bitch. This thing is just hanging on until finally this weekend, and I've been working it out every day. This weekend it started to stretch out a little bit, and I was able to do some of the things that I've used to do with it, but it's just a really nasty ass case of laryngitis. And so I think the only thing you can do is drink a lot of water. I'm going back to see the doc next week. He couldn't see me this week because he's busy as hell and so on and so forth. But I may want to insist just to see if he's got any kind of magic potion or something. So there's a couple of things that we want to talk about tonight. You know, in our news and information hour, there was a grizzly bear attack in Anchorage, Alaska. I don't know a lot about grizzly bears, but I did see that movie Grizzly Man. And it's funny how much you can learn about grizzly bears just watching that film. It was about Tim Treadwell, the grizzly man, the guy that used to go to the grizzly maze in Alaska every year for the summer months. He went for, I don't know, how many years, over a decade, I think, of visiting this area in Alaska called the maze. And this is where these grizzly bears live, a preponderance of them, a large number of them. And he would study them, Tim Treadwell. Now, he was not a professional zoologist or a animal behaviorist or anything. He was a guy who had recovered from a drug addiction, a serious bout with drugs, cleaned his life up, and fell in love with grizzly bears. Just found them to be the ultimate thing on earth. And so he would go there, and he videotaped his trips up there. He videotaped each and every grizzly bear that he saw. He had some amazing footage of grizzlies interacting in the wild, fighting, staking out territory, hunting, taking care of their young. And he got very, very close to these animals, too, physically, as well as, I suppose, on his part, by, you know, emotionally. I mean, I don't know how I know how one grizzly bear felt about him. One grizzly bear ate him. I mean, that's how he died. But it wasn't for a while. He had about 10 years with these grizzlies, and he named them. He gave them names like Brownie and Sugar Bear and Eddie. I mean, just names. He in a lot of ways, he did. He anthropomorphized these bears. He gave them human characteristic. And one of the people in the film, in fact, is quoted. It's a very funny quote, I have to say. He says, well, Tim just thought those bears were people in bear suits. I think he just thought that they were a bunch of people in bear suits, you know. And I thought that was a pretty sharp comment, because that's kind of how he treated these bears. You know, human beings get into so much trouble when we think that animals are, there's a human in an animal screaming to get out. You know, if we just treat animals a certain way, there's a little human being that's going to come screaming out someday. you know, they're going to want to kiss us on the lips, and they're going to, I mean, I don't even want to go to some of the places that some people want to go with their freaking animals. And maybe it's because animals are, you know, they do. Maybe they are kind of a blank slate that we can write anything we want on them, you know. But anyway, Treadwell went up to Alaska, and he studied them, and he became an interesting guy. And he had a girlfriend from California who went up there with him one year. And this was the last summer of his life. And if you watch this movie, and it was made by Werner Herzog, the German documentarian, and it's almost like you hear, I know he never said this, but it's almost as if Werner Herzog in his narration says, Tim Treadwell was a magnificent idiot. You know, it's like he walked right up to the edge of calling him that, but he never really did. But in a way, that was the sense you had. Tim Treadwell was this magnificent, glorious idiot. Yeah. So he goes up there, and he stays a little longer this one summer. You're supposed to, the smart thinking, the smart money says, you need to get out of the maze sometime in the early fall because the bears become very active. Well, he hung around another week or two, I think. He wanted to. One of the last things that he said on his videotapes that he made was, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I can get close to these animals. He says, there's nobody else like me. No one else can do what I do. Do not do what I do. And sure enough, the next day he was dead. And they think the bear that killed him was a bear that on this last videotape he made, he captured on tape. You see this bear. It's unlike any of the other bears that have been in the video so far. It's a solitary bear. He looks a little scrawny, and he's coming down the riverbank. And Treadwell says, I don't know that guy. And he gave him a name, like Blackie or Paul. I don't know. Not Paul, but he gave him cute little bear names. And he says, I don't know him that well. I got to get to know him, but I gotta do it slow. That guy, I'm not sure about that guy. He made this. So he was aware of these bears very, very much so, probably more than I guess a lot of us would be. And he says, I got to keep an eye on that guy. And sure enough, the next day, he was dead. This bear came into their camp, attacked Tim Treadwell, and this was recorded, by the way, not on video, but the audio of a video track captured the death of Tim Treadwell and his girlfriend, and the lens cap was on the camera, and this is why we are spared seeing this, and fortunately, I believe the tape's been destroyed. But his girlfriend came to his aid. He told her to get away, and she continued to try to assault this bear with whatever she had, and she lost her life, too. And that was the Grizzly Man. The Grizzly Man diaries are on TV, and the film, I think, is available for rental or purchase. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. They won't. They shan't. So they don't. A grizzly bear attacks 17s in Alaska. And how did Captain America do at the box office? Should we care? No. Do we? Sorta. Plus, the latest information on the death of singer Amy Winehouse. And that's a fascinating story. I was talking about it on Saturday night on the KFI show, and we'll get into it tonight as well. The Amy Winehouse story is fascinating to me because of the way people responded to it. People were not all kind. Some people were quite vicious, and I understand it to a point. I don't know. I think we're tired. I think we're a little tired of seeing these self-destructive types, and if we see self-destructive types, they're generally celebrities. I mean, who else are we going to be, quote, seeing as self-destructive? Our friends, maybe, but not the whole world sees them that way. Somebody that we know, someone's... You know, it's probably this. It's probably the only chance we get to be honest about how we feel about someone dying. Somebody dies in our life, and it's either a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend, a family member of a friend or someone extended even further out than that, none of whom we would really ever dare say, what a scumbag, unless everybody was in agreement. I think that's probably what empowers us. You know, we figure, well, I'm safe. We see one person do it, and then everybody does it. That's what happened with Amy Winehouse on Saturday. Everybody said, all of a sudden, one person said it, then another, and it was like good riddance to bad rubbish. This child that, I say child, you know, everybody's a kid to me. I'm 58, not everybody, but this kid who drank herself to death. So we can talk about that, or maybe not. Maybe I just said all that needs to be said about it. We'll find out. PhilHendryShow.com is our official website. Visit us, get a backstage pass, watch our live streaming video of the show, listen to the archives, listen to the podcast. Oh, yeah, go to our merchandise store. It's called Shop, and pick up one of our legacy collectible CDs, the best of CDs from 1999 to 2005, and they're going fast, brother. That's it. Those were our best ofs during the first 6 years of national syndication. And what we're going to do from this point forward will be in a decidedly different form in terms of marketing to you directly the audio of our show. And we'll tell you about that as well. So hit up our store, and not only can you get our collectible CDs, our T-shirts, and we have coffee mugs, and we have shot glasses, and it's all there at PhilHendryShow.com. So anyway, a grizzly pounced so furiously on a group of teenagers in the Alaska wilderness that they did not have time to pull out their bear deterrent spray to defend themselves. This is according to the father of one of the boys. The seven teenagers were in the last leg of a 30-day backcountry education course when they came upon the bear and its cub on Saturday night. The teens at the front of the pack bore the brunt of the attack. They were rescued early Sunday after activating their emergency locator beacon and tending to the wounded. They startled this bear, John Goetzigan said in a telephone interview from his Denver home, his 17-year-old son Samuel among the four injured teenagers. It sort of came around a curve. Now, this is not the first time I've heard of an attack like this. The bear attacked as the group lined up for a river crossing in the Talkeetna Mountains north of Anchorage. Those in the back of the line heard the warning, and the two at the front were the most seriously injured. One of the most dangerous things to run into in the woods, said Patricia Allaire, the mother of another injured student, Noah Allaire of Albuquerque. She said none of the teens had guns. The teens were taking part in an outdoor education course from the National Outdoor Leadership School, which leads many such excursions in Alaska and elsewhere. Another group of seven students and three instructors waited about 6 miles away for a helicopter hired by the Lander, Wyoming-based NOLS. What is that? That was the National Outdoor Leadership School. Palmer said the worst injured with bear bite wounds were Joshua Berg, 17, of New York City, and this young man, Samuel Goetzigan, age 17. They were being treated at Providence, Alaska Medical Center in Anchorage. Berg was in serious condition. Goetzigan was upgraded to good from serious. Goetzigan, the father, told Denver's KMGH television, the first person to go around a corner, yelled that there was a bear and then started running backward. Then Goetzigan said he looked behind him and saw the bear, so he started running. He said the bear tackled him on the way down the hill. I thought I was going to die when I was being attacked. I was so scared. When the bear broke off the attack, the teens activated a personal locator beacon they carried for emergencies. Patricia Allaire said her son tried to activate the beacon, thinking the bear was gone. But then it struck again, thrashing the teen's head and back and slightly puncturing a lung. Noah Allaire was listed in good condition on Monday. The Rescue Coordination Center, operated by the Alaska Air National Guard, called troopers around 9:30 to report the activated signal. And they decided the two most seriously injured would need a medical transport. So the boy who is the most injured was this the young man Joshua Berg. He was the worst injured. The other kid, Goetzigan, was upgraded to good. And they said, three were injured? So one, I guess, was a walking wounded. And that's where that's at. The uninjured student who remained was 16-year-old Samuel Boas of Westport. Boas is trained as an emergency medical technician. Goetzigan said the teens used their survival training, making a bandage out of a garbage bag. The other students injured were Victor Martin, who was treated at a hospital for a bite wound above his ankle and released. The teens were in the 24th day of their course when the attack occurred. There was no instructor with them because that far into the course, they've learned enough survival skills. Our basic goal is that when a student graduates from NOLS school, of course, they have the experience and background to be able to take other people out into backcountry. We're training people to be outdoor leaders. The worst thing that can possibly happen as the result of this, the worst thing is that they somehow begin to prohibit these outdoor schools for kids. That'll be the worst thing that could possibly happen. Now, you know and I know that there's going to be some jackass standing up in a Congress someplace, the Alaska legislature or the Colorado Assembly of Jackasses or the United States Congress of Clowns, and somebody's going to want to pass a law so that the kids are protected, blah, blah. Or some other jackass will say this: how dare human beings go out where bears are? Why, we don't know anything about, yeah, we're humans. We don't belong on this planet. We just sort of were sprouted here one day magically. So we shouldn't interact with bears because look what happened to the children. That, I guarantee you, that'll be the worst possible thing, and it'll be the worst possible reaction that we could have. These kids were on that particular course to learn exactly what that day taught them. Not exactly, but guess what? If you're in the wild, you have to learn to survive all kinds of eventualities. And those kids survived one of the eventualities. You don't go to survival training, and here's what it is. It's a big hike. Hey, did you know that that's what survival training is? What do you mean? Yeah, you just go on a hike, man. I mean, if anything really bad happens, oh my God, we've got to pull you out of there and no more survival training. Well, then I guess I didn't learn how to survive, did I? Yes, you did learn how to survive. We came and got you in a helicopter, and we're never taking you back there again. There. That's how you survive. Now, I'm only saying this, guys, for one reason. No one has yet suggested that, but I thought I'd get out in front of it, you know? I thought I'd just get out in front of it before some clown or some talk show host with nothing else to talk about says, why do we let our kids go out there and hang in the hand? And these are bears. Bears are... I'm a human being, so are you. We have flesh, blood. We're carbon-based. We evolved on this planet the same way bears did. So this is not the first time that human beings have been in contact with bears, and humans have pretty much won that fight overall. We go where we want, and we do what we want. Human beings go anywhere they want to go. And if anybody wants to stop us from going where we want to go, well, then they just, that's too bad for them. Because we go and we do. We build a house here. We build a house there. We get in a boat and go there. We go to the top of the world, the bottom of the world, and all the way around the world. We're humans. We go where the hell we want to go. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I don't think it's too much to ask of our young people, and I'm not even asking it of our young people. I don't think it's too much to ask of ourselves to, when we let our young people enroll in these courses, which I think are fantastic, that we keep in mind that we get a little smart and we keep in mind it's a survival course. They may run into something they have to survive. And quit being stupid about this stuff. Now, like I said, nobody has said anything. I'm hopeful that no one will. I got money, though, that says something. This time tomorrow, when we come on here tomorrow, how many stories do you think there will be? Well, probably just one or two stories. But I got money. I'll tell you what, just to show you that I'm not a cheapskate, that I'm not some cheap bum, I got $1,000, all right? Just $1,000, just a gentleman's bet. And if there's nothing in the news about any jackball getting up in front of some legislature or Congress saying that how dare we send our kids into the wild and this and that, I will take that grand, all right, and I will donate it in lieu of something better, and I'm not saying that this is a bad charity, but I will donate it to the American Red Cross just to show you that I'm not some creep, okay? But I don't think I'm going to have to do it. I've been doing this job too long, man. I know people too well. And I know how desperate some jackasses are to hang on to some issue, you know? Of all the bad things that ever came out of talk radio, that's the worst. Somebody's got to have an issue. What's the issue? Remember in the movie Harvey Milk? You remember the great character Josh Brolin played Dan White? And it was a great scene where Josh Brolin, as Dan White, is drunk And he stands there in front of Harvey Milk and says, I got issues. Dan White's got issues. Yeah, he sure did. So, but I got money that says this time tomorrow night there's going to be a story, if not some congressman, if not some concerned parent, quote unquote, some talk show host somewhere with nothing to talk about will come up with that one. Okay, oh, we got to keep the kids from going out on survival courses. Why is that? They might survive something? Exactly. We don't want our kids to go on a survival course, man. They may actually learn how to survive something, like a bear attack. All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What killed Amy Winehouse? Autopsy results are in, and we'll tell you what they may or may not have said. Plus, investors put Netflix on the hot seat for their price increase. I told you guys at Netflix it was a bad idea. Oh, you mean I didn't? Well, I was thinking about it. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com for podcasts, merchandise, blogs, streaming, HD. It's all there at philhendryshow.com.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we are in live streaming video right now in HD. And let me turn the fan off. I'm going to knock over that bottle of water there. And welcome back to our program. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard are on their midsummer hiatus. They will be back with us very, very shortly. It is our news and information hour. Now, where are we going with it? We also, I know that I have David G. Hall waiting in the wings. We're going to talk a little bit about this statement that I just made on the air, which was that I think this time tomorrow night we will read a news story somewhere that either a congressman or a state legislator or a talk show host will call for the outlawing of survival schools, will call for, I mean, it's not that big of a, you know, prediction. You agree with me, David? Is that what you're calling?
No, the reason why I'm calling you is because I'm calling you out on something, and I think it's a I don't think it's fair, and I think that being a veteran broadcaster like yourself, you would have had, you would have displayed a little bit more class, Bill.
In what way?
In the way that Sammy Brannigan is going to be going on the air tomorrow night, and is a talk show host and a talent that I have been working with. Brannigan's World starts tomorrow on 50 radio stations, and that was going to be his opening hour. He was going to call for a federal law keeping kids in survival schools out of federal preserves, national forests. And I guess you think that it's funny that you sent somebody to eavesdrop or spy on Sammy Brannigan at a show prep so that...
I never sent anybody to spy on... I never even heard of Sammy Brannigan.
Well, I had talked to you... That's not very honest of you, Phil, because I talked to you...
I knew that you had some young talk show host that you were bringing along.
Exactly.
I never knew who the guy was. And I certainly didn't send anybody out to spy on anybody.
Well, you know that this kid's going to be hot, don't you?
I never even heard of this guy, Sammy Brannigan. Brannigan's World?
That's the name we're using, yeah. Well, let me tell you, if you didn't know, I don't believe you. Because Sammy Brannigan, everyone's been talking about this guy from Maine to the San Diego Mammal Research Center. From the San Diego Mammal Research Center all the way to Maine. The Sammy Brannigan Hour. And he was...
Wait. What is that from the Mammal Research Center? What is that?
What I want to concentrate on here... That's an advertising line we're going to use for the show. But what I want to concentrate on is...
From the San Diego Mammal Research Center to Maine, Sammy Brannigan's World...
No, the Sammy Brannigan World. The world of Brannigan, something like that. And we were going to kick off with a call to action of the Sammy Brannigan listeners. We want our congressman to wake up and to prohibit kids from hiking in survival classes in these national forests. Two children, Phil, were almost mauled to death. Do you think that that is something that's entertaining?
I certainly do not, David. That's why I am, well, you know.
Yeah, that's why you're what? Go ahead. Why you're doing what?
I don't think it is, but that's why I do support these kids learning survival skills.
Now, I shouldn't have given you another chance. You know what you're talking about.
You're right. I had to think what I wanted to say. But what I wanted to say was, I don't think the solution to the problem is eliminating these kids, the opportunity they have to learn these skills.
So you think it is a better idea, Phil, to keep feeding kids to bears? That's what you want to do?
No, I do not think that that's what that's not what I want to do. That's absolutely absurd.
That's what happened, Phil, over this last weekend. Okay? You and people like you wanted to just go ahead and feed another kid to a bear and feed yet another kid to a bear. Let's just keep shoving them right into a bear's mouth until all you see are a pair of kicking sneakers as the kid goes down. Well, I don't think so, Phil, and neither does Sammy Brannigan. Much of what we've been talking about...
What did I ever say to you that I wanted to see kids fed to bears?
That's what almost happened. Now, you heard those parents... Sammy Brannigan is going to be calling. I hate you so much for spilling the beans. I really do.
I was taking a wild guess, man. I never, ever, ever eavesdropped on Sammy Brannigan. I wouldn't know Sammy Brannigan from Brannigan, the movie.
What? You wouldn't know...
The movie with John Wayne.
Boy, you got me there, man. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't think anybody does know what you're talking about. You're just going off. You go off and talk and talk and talk and talk until it sounds good. You just talk until it's funny or it sounds good. And once you hit on a theme, you don't care who it hurts. You don't care whose career it destroys. You will go ahead and run with it. Hi, I'm Phil Hendry. You know what I think? I think that we should still allow survival schools. Even though that means we feed 1 to 2 kids a week to a bear...
I never said that either. Boy, I really like the way you just take what I say and twist it to, to the advantage of Sammy Brannigan.
Hey, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, I never saw you, you didn't prop me like this.
Oh, were we going to cry? Did Daddy not pay enough attention to you?
No, it's got nothing to do with that. Okay, but with all the attention you're paying to this kid, how can he miss?
He can miss because you sent somebody to eavesdrop on his... On his show prep.
I didn't send anybody to eavesdrop on anything. To be honest with you, David, and with all due respect, Sammy Brannigan, whoever he is, he ain't got nothing I need, all right? There ain't nothing he got to talk about, man, that I got to talk about. Okay?
So that's how it is, huh?
Yeah, that's how it is. That's how it is. Sammy Brannigan ain't got nothing to talk about on his little show that he's going to be rolling out on 50 big stations,
Just run him right into the ground, Phil. Go ahead. Someday, Sammy Brannigan... It's going to be bigger than Rush Limbaugh. Then what are you going to say?
Then I'll say congratulations, Sammy. But I don't think you got there by calling for a ban on survival schools in national parks so that we don't feed 2 kids a week to bears.
No, that was your line. That's not Sammy Brannigan's line.
Well, if it was his line, maybe he'd have a better chance. As it is, it was my line, so...
So in other words, you got all the funnies. And Sammy ain't got nothing, huh? Sammy's got nothing to offer. All Sammy's gonna do is lay an egg, huh? You make the omelets, but Sammy lays the eggs. Is that it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah. All right, thanks so much.
You know something, Phil?
Thank you very much, David. I didn't mean to hang up on you, but yes, I did. We'll be back with more Amy Winehouse and the autopsy report. As long as we're talking about autopsies and Sammy Brannigan, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Sammy Brannigan, you...
Phil Hendry. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
All right, Amy Winehouse, we're going to talk about Amy Winehouse. Maybe you never heard of Amy Winehouse. She had a very, very distinct voice. I always said that Amy Winehouse was more of an impressionist than she was a singer, but there was no denying the fact that she won Grammys. There's no denying the fact that the woman was very popular. She peaked in 2008 with an amazing array of awards. As well as I think she was named New Artist of the Year and a lot of things. Here she is. This was a song her big hit single called Rehab that everybody was quoting upon news that she had, in fact, died from an overdose.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no.
So, you know, the reason why I call Amy Winehouse an impressionist is she's a Cockney, or was, from London. And you can hear their really distinctive Motown, Detroit Motown sound. You can hear her singing, which is reminiscent of, I don't know, just about any of the girl groups that sang for Berry Gordy in those days. Nonetheless, it's a hell of a voice. And she was a beautiful girl. And she was wildly popular with the people that loved her and bought her music. Here is, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, who is this? Accompanied by producer Mick Ronson, Winehouse performed Valerie. This was a fan favorite that has been covered by both Panic and Panic at the Disco and the TV show Glee. And then she did another fan favorite. This one's called Back to Black. It was featured on her 2007 album, which is, this is the title track. Beautiful music, isn't it? I mean, and it's a throwback kind of music that's almost has an analog sound to it. And a very much an early 60s kind of big production song. Her singing style, like I said, reminded me of many Motown singers. And that's why I say she was like an impressionist. But, you know, that's just Phil Hendry. And don't take my word for it, for crying out loud. I'm an impressionist. Well, not really. I just do stupid voices. But Amy Winehouse was no question a talent and had a great many people that loved and admired her. She died overnight Friday. Investigators may not know what killed singer Amy Winehouse until they get the results from lab tests on her blood and tissue, and that would be the specific toxin that ended her life. But it is believed it was a drug overdose. Inquiries continue into the circumstances of the death, according to London's Metropolitan Police, also known as Scotland Yard, in a statement on Sunday. At this stage, the 27-year-old's death is being treated as unexplained, and there have been no arrests in connection with the incident. The singer, beloved for her talent but infamous for erratic public behavior, arrests, and drug problems, was found dead at her London apartment on Saturday. A report in the UK Daily Mail suggested Winehouse's death may have been brought on by a combination of ecstasy, cocaine, and ketamine, which she allegedly had bought the night before her death. She was also observed to have been drinking heavily. Now, when she died, and the news made it onto the news fast track of the modern age, which is Twitter, and there is no other news service faster. There is even the Drudge Report, which at one time, I think, if you thought of Matt Drudge, he had it before anybody. Well, Twitter's got it before anybody. Anybody's got it. And when that finally broke on Twitter, there were as many people disparaging her as there were sorry that she died. And there were a lot of people saying the following, and not that it's necessarily a bad comparison until you look into it further. Who cares about Amy Winehouse drinking herself to death? Innocent people died in Norway. We should be talking about the causes of those things. Well, that's where people get a little confused, because whether you want to believe it or not, and whether you like it or not, and whether it's something that you'll accept or not, the fact is that alcoholism is not a character failing. Drug addiction is not a character failing. This is a biochemical problem of the brain. People who drink too much or use drugs to excess to the point of abuse or overdose are trying to medicate themselves. They are trying to correct something that's wrong with them. So it's you know, it got a lot of attention when certain people said, you know, Amy Winehouse is a no-bit scumbag, good riddance to that hanky bitch. You know, she was nothing but a drug addict and an alcoholic, and whatever happened to those poor people in Norway. I mean, people who talked that way probably thought they were saying something original. But they were really just talking out of their asses, because those people are the people that used to spit on the town drunk. You know, those are the people who laughed at the Elephant Man. I'm serious. Those are the people who went to the freak shows. Those are the people who had no idea what this world was all about, the world that surrounds us. And when you look at somebody like Amy Winehouse, you don't have to like her music. And I'm not a particular fan of it, because I can get the originals that sound much better. Now, that's just my thing. But I sure as hell don't think there was anything wrong with her. I think what was wrong with her was going on in her head. What was wrong with her was happening biochemically. I'm not saying that there was a psychological problem. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that people are born with a chemical imbalance which creates a need for certain things. And what people need to do is try to figure out why it is they don't feel good. So they drink, or they use drugs, or they snort coke, or they smoke weed. What are they trying to do? Is it because they're just bad people? Come on. You know, we don't live back in the day of Carrie Nation anymore, okay? It's not, you know, we're not going door to door with a Bible. This has to do with the fact that some people have a biochemistry problem of the brain that they're trying to fix. Now, today, unlike 60, 70, 80 years ago, we now know we can treat schizophrenics with medication. Schizophrenia doesn't have to do with tying the person to a wall and beating them. That's what they used to do back in the 18th and the 17th century. Tie them, chain them to a dungeon wall, and beat them until you beat the devil out of them. Because it was the devil's voice that they were hearing. And it was the devil that they were seeing. It didn't mean that you got into the psychoanalysis area and talked to them about their daddy and their mommy and the way they used to stick their finger in their rear end or whatever they thought was wrong with them then. And we found out now, after all of those years, that schizophrenia is a biochemical problem. It's a neurological problem in a lot of ways. Schizophrenics are afflicted physically. You give them drugs and they're better. They stop being symptomatic. They stop hearing voices. You give them the right kind of drugs, and the symptoms go away. Same thing with bipolar people, manic depressive people. The same thing with anybody who suffers from sleeplessness. They may have an alpha wave problem. It's got nothing heavier to do with anything other than that. And the same thing goes with drug addicts, alcoholics, substance abusers of all kind. It might even be true of people with a gambling addiction. You can go into therapy all you want. Maybe it's true of a sex addiction. Therapy is one thing, but the brain is tissue and chemical, and there are EEGs to read. And you want to talk about Amy Winehouse being a drunk? Yes, she was, and she was a drug addict. Was she a bad person? Did she have a character fault? No, she didn't. So people that talk about her like she's a two-bit nothing skank, they're idiots. They're about as stupid as they are ugly. They're about as dumb as they are dumb about music, too. They probably wouldn't know what a hit record was, man, if you hit them with it. So it sounds gutsy on Twitter to talk about what a piece of crap Amy Winehouse was, and who cares? We care about the people in Norway. It just shows how stupid some people are. It's a disease. It's a physical disease. Physical! And you have to treat it as such. And that girl died from that disease, and people that think it's some character failing that she had, that she was just a slut that liked to drink, and she took it for granted how great her life was, and if we had her life, we would have lived it better. Yeah, sure. They don't know what the hell they're talking about, so, you know, shut up and ball up and suck your thumb, do something else. One other guy that's got a mental problem, and they know now this guy is so crackers that he won't even stand trial, Jared Lee Lautner, the guy that shot Representative Gabrielle Giffords, the man that killed 6 people and injured 13 others, including the congresswoman, this man, when he was somewhat coherent, because I believe he is being treated, with, guess what, drugs, has said basically he wants to die. He wants the injection. He said, kill me now. As defense attorneys continue to fight against the forced medication of Jared Lee Lautner, accused in the Tucson, Arizona shooting spree that killed six people and injured 13 others, court papers reveal his emotional state and why he's being forcibly medicated. Prison officials have deemed him a danger to himself. And that's not all that these court papers say. He has been hearing voices, and you know that that's symptomatic of some kind of psychosis. One doctor reported that Lautner was often viewed as inconsolable, uncooperative, and unresponsive. He also displayed hypersexed behavior. He talked about the killings and the possibility of receiving... Well, I don't know what happened here, man. I got the wrong pages. Maybe the possibility of receiving the death penalty. And he sobbed uncontrollably for 55 minutes. At one point, Lautner said, I want to die. Give me an injection. Kill me now. A federal appeals court is set to hear arguments regarding his forced medication in August. I don't know what these lawyers are saying. They're probably saying something along these lines. Well, we don't know what that medication is. Stop giving him the medication. And that's so he can return to his psychotic state so that you can show him to be psychotic in the court. What exactly is it that you're saying, counselor? Why do you want this man not to be medicated? Lautner, who has been deemed mentally ill and incompetent to stand trial in the January 8th shooting rampage, is in custody at a federal prison medical center in Missouri. Doctors there began treating him against his will with psychotropic drugs a month ago, prompting his lawyers to ask the courts to halt the forced medication that they said could irreparably harm or even kill him. One prison doctor said that he was depressed. He expressed regret for the circumstances that led to his arrest. He also reported that the radio was talking to him and inserting thoughts into his mind. Now, there are people who say the following thing. Oh, they're building a case for mental illness. Well, you know, I mean, what does that mean, building a case for mental illness? What is that? I mean, you have to have a doctor testify as to it. You have to have a doctor... More than one doctor testified not only as to the man's mental state, but the medication that he's receiving. And, you know, I got to tell you something. If ever there was a state ever invented in the history of these United States that wouldn't mind dropping a guy's ass right down a hole someplace, it's Arizona. So don't give me this bull crap about building any case. Now, the lawyers want the medication stopped. Why is that? What do they want? Do they want their client to be crazy enough to convince a court that he does not deserve to die, that he deserves to spend the rest of his life in a psychiatric hospital? I'm willing to believe it right now, based upon what I'm reading, the news reports that are coming out of Arizona. This guy has been absolutely, as far as these doctors are reporting, he has been absolutely incoherent, unable to sit and stand trial, to listen to evidence presented against him, to make decisions. He's gone, man. He's hearing voices. He's on medication. And apparently the medication has worked to the point where he, according to one doctor, has expressed regret and wants lethal injection. And apparently the medication hasn't worked in some instances because the guy's hearing voices coming out of the radio, and they ain't mine. The radio may be talking to him, but it ain't me. And it's inserting thoughts into his mind. That could be Sean Hannity.
Might be Michael Savage.
Maybe Michael Savage, yeah. Don't talk, bud. It'll just destroy your throat. All right, we'll be back with our final. Coming up, Netflix explains its price increase to investors. What did they say? We'll find out. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Radio for patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on the video cast. If you're looking at home, you can see there a picture of David Wu in a tiger suit. David Wu is a congressman. Is he a congressman? He's a member of the House of Representatives from Oregon. And there is a call for an investigation into David Wu because there are claims of unwanted sexual contact, an unwanted sexual encounter with the teenage friend of one of his daughters. Or a high school friend of one of his daughters, should say, well, teenage. If you're high school, you're teenage. The paper reported the Oregonian, which first published the allegations, did not identify the woman, but reported that she left a distraught voicemail on Wu's Portland congressional office phone. The paper reported she's the daughter of one of Wu's high school friends who has donated to his campaign. So she's the daughter of a high school friend who donated to his campaign. Now, listen to this. One person who heard the voicemail described the woman as upset, breathing heavily, and distraught. In the voicemail, the young woman accused Wu of aggressive and unwanted sexual behavior, according to sources with direct knowledge of the message and its contents. Boy, I tell you what, Wu, if nothing else, man, you ain't got anybody in your office that cares whether you live or die. Man. According to about six people in David Wu's office who heard the tape, talk about loyalty. Anyway, reporters could not verify the woman's age. Notes on Facebook over the past 18 months indicated she graduated from high school in 2010. California records show she registered to vote in August. Wu is 56. He issued a one-sentence statement responding to the allegations. He said he's not going to resign, but he's not going to seek re-election. This is very serious. I have absolutely no desire to bring unwanted publicity, attention, or stress to a young woman and her family, he said. The encounter allegedly happened over the Thanksgiving holiday, shortly after Wu's re-election. The woman did not press charges because the Oregonian reports there were no witnesses, so it would be her word against the congressman's. It has been a turbulent 2 years for Wu. He separated from his wife in 2009 and has two children. It's been a turbulent 2 years for Wu. He separated from his wife and he has two children. Boy, that's rough. Anyway, I'm sure what it means is he's separated from his wife, and that's not too good because he's got two children. All right. After Wu's re-election campaign, seven of Wu's staffers resigned last February after the congressman began acting oddly and sent unusual emails to his staff, including one with a picture of him in a tiger suit. Right there. Is he nuts? Maybe he's flipped. I don't know. In an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos in February, Wu said he was consulting medical help, undergoing therapy, and taking medication to address his indiscretions. This was a very difficult time in my life. Last October was not a good month. It was very stressful. I said some things, which I sincerely regret now. Anyway, man, we'll find out. The guy's, he's got problems. Okay. I was going to say, what was the young lady leaving a message about? But it doesn't matter, you know. Maybe she wanted to leave a message to him because she was pissed off that she wasn't able to call the police. Maybe she wanted to leave a message to him because she was pissed and she wanted him to hear how she felt. Maybe I can't go to the cops, but I'm going to tell you something. I can well imagine somebody angry being short of breath and saying, you want to know something? I didn't go to the cops because it's your word against mine, but I'm going to tell you something right now. If you ever wear a tiger suit in front of me again. All right, anyway. Netflix addresses investors as customers upset with price hike. Well, as you can tell by the sound of the music, we never will get to that story. It's very unlikely we'll get to it tomorrow night because by then you guys will have read it yourselves. Let me just direct your attention to Netflix addresses investors as customers upset with price hike. World famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rantz, our technical direction by Dan Northcraft, and our associate producers are Chris Johnson and Fred Scotty. Don't forget our website is philhendryshow.com, our podcasts, our merchandise, our blog, our streaming high definition video, and of course, our affiliates all there at philhendryshow.com. Again, Netflix addresses investors. They basically said, shut up! No, they basically said, we hiked the price for you. What? You got a problem with that? And they said, no, but we want to appear as if we do. And they said, okay, we get it. We'll see you tonight.
Phil Hendry.